Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
You're the lucky one, so I've been told. As free as a wind blowing down the road. Loved by many, hated by none. I'd say you were lucky because I know what you've done. Not a care in the world, not a worry inside. Everything's gonna be alright, because you're the lucky one.
Welcome, welcome to Bleeding Blue, a show about the history of the New York Football Giants. My name is Justin Panic. You will see snacks in the conversation that we had with Big Blue VCR. The conversation that we had was all about the luckiest moments in Giants franchise history. St. Patrick's Day theme. It's not this week. It's going to be next week. We're going to split up the conversation that we had into two parts. This episode, Big Blue VCR is going to talk about moments or numbers 10 through 6, and then next week will be the luckiest moments, number 5 to 1. Big Blue VCR, Matt, he is an encyclopedia of Giants history, really just chock full of information, chock full of nuggets, and reliving some lucky moments for the next 2 weeks. Here is Big Blue VCR, here's the show, here's part 1, hope you enjoy. All right, welcome back to the show. We now want to welcome on a person who I consider to be an encyclopedia of Giants history and somebody who I think is the best person to go to when it comes to the type of theme and the format that we're carrying out, which is the luckiest moments in Giants franchise history. We're celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Snacks, you are notorious for loving the Irish.
I really don't appreciate when you say that, because while I look very Irish,
yes,
I'm not at all. So it's a little discrediting to my ancestors and everything. So I would appreciate if you would apologize and take that back.
I do not apologize because I need to introduce our guest, Big Blue VCR. Matt, welcome back onto the show. We interviewed you last year. So this is going to be a little bit different, not really like a formal interview, but I felt like you were the perfect person to go to, and I don't know how many episodes we are into Bleeding Blue Snacks, but this is the first time in Bleeding Blue's history that I am handing over the reins of an episode to somebody else. So BBVCR, Matt, welcome onto the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Amen.
Wow. I'm honored. Like I didn't realize that's a lot of responsibility that you're handing me the reins over here. I didn't realize it was that level of uniqueness for this episode, but no, it's great to talk to you guys again.
So what we're going to be doing is top 10. Now, Matt, you sent me probably about 20 or 30 moments in the DMs, which is, I said, this is why that I love you. Cause if you're good at what you do, I like to think that Snacks and I we're good at what we do and you know, the shows that we do and everything that we do. But if you're successful, it's because you're good at what you do and we're all psychopaths with this stuff. So you sent me like 30 moments of like lucky not even games, but just lucky moments in Giants franchise history. I'm like, all right, we're going to have to narrow it down to 10. So the show is in your hands. Introduce a lucky moment, introduce a lucky game, wherever you want to take us, let's do it.
Luck of the Irish.
All right, excellent. So I'll set some ground rules over here because, again, like I said, I had to edit myself down because I did go a little overboard as I was going through. I'm like, oh, there's this.
No, but I love it.
So I tried to focus on, I was like, okay, what lucky moments in Giants history can I look at that either have a direct impact from a playoff spot, building towards a championship or an actual championship. Mm. So where I'm going to start right now really is for number 10 is the 2002 tiebreaker scenario.
Yes. I'm sorry, Matt, before you came out, I wanted to ask you about this. So I'm so pumped. This is a start. Okay. I'm all ears.
Yep. So this was a game that I was at was the Giants were playing the Titans and they were up by 12 points in the fourth quarter. Jim Fossil had a lot of stuff happen. He was the coach. Jim Fossil won a lot. Like he won all his games in December, but he had some like horrible meltdowns that we don't need to get into. But this one against Tennessee was one of them. They blew the game. McNair gets a touchdown like with like 9 seconds to go. He gets a 2-point conversion. They go to OT. Giants lose 32-29 in overtime. So that drops the record to 6-6. So now you're like, oh, like, you know, already the pressure was on Fossil at this point. He had demoted Sean Payton, where Sean Payton was not calling plays anymore. So they're 6-6. They look like they're dead. Then comes the Jim Fossil, like, December run, where he goes, they beat the Redskins, they blow out Dallas, and then they go in Indianapolis, and they basically rout Indianapolis. That's the game when Kerry Collins went crazy and Toomer had 200 yards receiving. And so they win. Now they're 9-6. Now keep in mind, when they were 6-6, they were looking up at two teams in the standings who they had to hope would fall apart. Those two teams were the Falcons and the Vikings. So the first thing, the Falcons were 8-3-1. It was the Falcons and the Saints, not the Vikings, the Falcons and the Saints.
Yep.
So the Falcons are 8-3-1. They then drop two of their next three. So suddenly that gives the Giants life when the Giants are having this winning streak. The Saints, meanwhile, actually are even worse. The Saints are 9-4. So the first thing is they're taking on the Vikings in New Orleans. And this is the part where you have to like almost picture this in your head. So Saints are up 31-24, about 5 minutes to go in the game. Vikings come back. Randy Moss scores a touchdown. With 5 seconds to go, they cut the lead to 31-30. Instead of tying the game to go to overtime, Mike Tice decides to go for two. Culpepper scores. Vikings win 32-31. And then all of a sudden, you know, horrible collapse right there for the Saints at home. The next week, they're taking on the 1-13 Bengals. They're winning 13-7 in the fourth quarter. And then a running back named Nick Lucci, he scores two touchdowns, including the game winner. Saints lose 20-13. And then now, because of these losses and because of the weird tiebreakers, they're now 9-6. They're tied with the Giants. And that's why the Giants game against the Eagles later on, which I'm going to talk about in a bit, meant it was winning in. Because if the Saints had just beaten either the Vikings when they had them at home or a terrible Bengal team, the Giants are on the outside looking in. So they're in trouble. So because of the way that both the Falcons fell apart and the Saints fell apart, that opened the door for the Giants for that final week to have a chance to win. Otherwise, that comeback means nothing. Fossil gets fired after 2002, and they never make the playoffs. So things out of your hands. We've seen the Giants have to hope somebody loses. That actually helped. That actually happened.
That actually happened, right? Instead of like 2010, where I think it was the Bears that had to win or against the Packers or something, whatever the case. But like to me, I was probably 9 or 10 years old at that time, and you know, I had no idea of like the tiebreaker scenario and how everything worked like that. I'm like, okay, we're playing the Eagles. It's winning in, and I remember Jeremy Shockey getting a jump ball from Kerry Collins and against Brian Dawkins and getting that. And then, you know, I like you said, you're going to talk about it later, so I don't want to give it up, but just that whole aura of a game. Now, real quick, and you don't have to, like, very quick, that 2002 team, to me, I thought they were really good. And maybe not really good, but I thought they could have made a run. They kind of got hot at the right time, like normal Giants teams do when they win Super Bowls. And I think it was a testament to being up a gazillion points in the fourth quarter against the Niners. And then the Trey Junkin, whatever his name is, the bot snap and the Matt Allen, the non-pass interference, everything like that. But I feel like that team could have made a little bit of a run. Do you feel that way at all? Or was it kind of like, yeah, they should have lost to the Niners, not in that fashion, but they should have lost early?
No, I was really annoyed because 2002 was one of those seasons. There was not a juggernaut. There was not like a powerhouse in the league that year. So the Giants had gotten hot, where basically what Fossil did was he simplified the offense. He basically said, okay, I got Amani Toomer, I got Jeremy Shockey, I got Tiki Barber, and I got Kerry Collins. These three guys are the guys I'm going to ride with. And he opened things up a little bit more for them. And that offense was crazy. Like if you know, we all hate that Niner game, how it ended. But if you just watch the first half of that game, Collins cruising. Was going up and down the field on them.
Yeah, they were cruising.
They couldn't stop. I think Toomer had three touchdowns in the first half or whatever. Like they couldn't stop anything. So the way that Giant team was constructed, I really thought that they were going to go in there. They should have beat the Niners. And then from there, like I said, I think they would have had Tampa the next week is where the is where they ended up. Yeah. I didn't think that Tampa was all that great. Like, you know, maybe they would have lost there, but the Giants would have given them a fight. And right. and like I said, is their offense was a matchup nightmare for everyone. Yeah. You know, the defense was opportunistic, was coming along. So yeah, like I agree with you. Like once they started getting on that roll, I really thought that like they had a chance to make some noise. So like it was such a gut punch for that that Niners game.
Yeah, it always kills me because I remember that was the when the Bucs won, they beat the Raiders, right? The 2002 yeah. and they just and the Giants that like we were saying they were hot and the fact that they were up so many points against the Niners. I remember Strahan pointing at T.O. like look scoreboard. At the scoreboard. Yep, yep, I remember all of that. So I'm glad we share the same sentiment that team could have probably made a run if they just snap the ball correctly, or you know, maybe if the defense made a stop. But I don't want to get too far into it.
No, but I have a question. I have a question for both of you. Since you know, Snacks, you remember that moment? Then you know, Matt, you
I missed school the next day. I cried to my parents because I said I was going to get made fun of by my friends because the Giants blew it. So
would you trade that moment for the? You know, would you trade it away if the alternate reality happened where either the Falcons or the Saints do not collapse and then the Giants don't make the playoffs? Would you have rather them not make the playoffs that year, or are you okay with still suffering that moment because they made the playoffs?
Matt, you can answer first because I think I've got
my thought is making the playoffs is so difficult that I would take the playoff chance, even though that was such a gut punch. I'm a big believer also that you get to the playoffs as a team, you learn about dealing with the pressure, you learn about like the stuff. So yeah, as horrible as that was, and like, yeah, like, you know, if the Vikings didn't blow it, we would never had to experience that. I would still rather be in the playoffs.
Yep. That's fair. So normally I would say, no, I'd rather not make the playoffs and like escape from the misery of what was.
'Cause you're very emotional.
I am very emotional. And like that playoff game, I was 9 years old, like legit 9 years old. And everybody at that
time. No, you would have acted the same. You would have cried if you were 27 or if you were 9.
But that's my point. Exactly. I've been the same person since I was that age. And and I legitimately didn't go to school because I was in tears. I was like, Mom, Dad, I cannot go to school. I'm going to get made fun of. I can't do it. And I would rather go to the playoffs because the fact that we had that win and in game against Philly, and I remember it so distinctly, and the events of that game, which again, I know Matt, you said you're going to bring up later on, so I don't want to get too far into it. That Philly game alone makes that playoff misery of a loss, which I consider worse than the Deshaun Jackson game in 2010.
That's why I asked. That's why, because I know that is such misery for a lot of people.
So it's the like, worst. It's in my lifetime. And I've told you a million times, like 2000 is like the first season I really became a sick psychotic fuck, and that was when we got blown out by the Ravens in the Super Bowl. And to this day, that 49er loss in the wild card round is the worst loss I've ever experienced as a Giants fan.
Yeah.
And I would still take being in the playoffs and what we did to Philly, and now knowing the history of it, like what had to happen for us to even have the winning in against Philly to get there, I would still take that. Normally I would not, though. So you're right, Justin, you were on to me.
Yeah. All right, so Matt, why don't you take us through your second moment?
Okay, so number 9 on the list. We should put like drum rolls in this or something. I have the 2008 missed field goal by John Casey in the win and in, or not the win, it's for the win for the home field advantage in the playoffs. So again, setting the scene for that one. And we all know Giants started 2008 11-1. They were the best team in the NFL. They beat everybody who was going to be in the Super Bowl. Yeah, that was. In my mind, the 2008 team was the closest to the 86 dominance that I saw. And I actually thought for a little bit, they may have been better because the offense was better in the 2008 Giants than the 86 offense.
Yeah.
The Giants defense, Lawrence Taylor was the difference, but basically the overall defense play, like that was the most, you know, like complete team the Giants had been in a long time. I mean, like they blew out the Ravens. I was at that game. And they ran the ball like up down their throats.
Yep.
Plaque shoots himself. Giants lose a couple of games in there. So now they're in this situation against the Panthers. It was Sunday Night Football. It was freezing. I was at that game seeing it. And I remember it like snowed and like ice was just like before it. brutally, brutally cold. That's a game where the Panthers jumped up first. They're up like 21-10 in the first half. And then it was back and forth. And the Giants come back. And then Jacob scores a touchdown. Eli gets a two-pointer to Hickson. They tie the game 28-28. But there's about, you know, 3 minutes to go in the game. The Panthers have a chance. Panthers drive down the field and get in a position for John Casey to kick a field goal. Now, keep in mind, John Casey, and I had to look this up, he hit in his career 42 field goals of 50 yards or more in his career.
Wow.
So he had the leg to do this. But, and I did a post a while back that I found an old video from the Giants where somebody was discussing, I think it was Matt Millen, was discussing how Parcells used to have them open the doors at Giant Stadium, Giant Stadium, which would mess with the wind and would cause all the swirling to go on. And at the time here in 2008, you were still in old Giant Stadium. So suddenly the crosswinds are kicking up and Casey kicks the ball. And right before it, actually, I think it was Andrea Joyce, who was on NBC, talks about it. And she says, there's a crosswind. There's a crosswind going from like left to right or whatever it was. And sure enough, kick goes wide right. As a Giant fan, like, you know, we've seen them lose on 60, you know, Graham Gano beat us with a 60, whatever yard field goal. The guy in Philly beat us 60 yards. So we've seen these long field goals go against us. That one, once it pushed wide, it then opened up the Giants in overtime. They get the ball. Derek Ward runs right down. And then instead of kicking a field goal, Coughlin's not messing around. He gives the ball to Jacobs. Jacobs pounds in, I think, his third touchdown of the day. Giants win, Giants clinch home field advantage in the playoffs. So my number nine moment is John Casey missing that field goal and that gust of wind pushed it just wide, even though he had hit 50 yarders 42 times in his career.
Right. And I'm so glad you brought up the sideline report, because I don't know if you tweeted out recently or somebody else, because I literally just recently watched that video, and that kick, when it's going up, it looks like it's going in, and you could see some of the Panthers like going like this, like it's good, it's good, it's good. And then like the bare last second, it goes wide. And that was just so unbelievable. And Al Michaels is like, is the NFC going through Charlotte, or are we going overtime? And that was an absolute electric game. And Justin, I think we did a spot on like, you know, my favorite plays as a running back that I've seen live, and Derek Ward's run in overtime, it was 54 yards, and setting up Jacobs' overtime touchdown for the win was one of them. Just, that was an unreal game. And, you know, obviously the game against Philly in the divisional round with home field advantage was not good, but we don't talk about that. So that I love that one. And that game was one. I wish I was there for that one. That is one of the better games that the Giants
had. I was there.
You were there. Ah, so I'm the only one here that wasn't there. Fuck me, huh?
Well, it's funny that, you know, like, I actually did. I tweeted the other day, because when I was doing my research and prep for this, I was going through it and watching it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to show that one again. And boom, I put it up.
It was you that I saw from.
Who else would tweet it, Snacks? Who else would tweet it?
No, you're right. You're right. It's why this collaboration of Bleeding Blue, a Giants History podcast, and Big Blue VCR is like second to none. It's like it's like Mantle and Maris in 61. It's just perfect.
But you know what's funny is it invariably, whenever I tweet something about that game, somebody responds. And in hindsight, they may not be wrong. If the Giants had lost that game instead, and the Panthers have home field, they don't face the Eagles.
Yeah.
And in my mind, the Eagles, which it turned out to be, the Eagles were the only team that was a bad matchup for the Giants that whole playoffs. You know, they beat it before. Philly is just like, you know, there's always something about Philly with them. If the Giants lose that game, Philly goes to, I believe they go to Carolina, and the Giants play the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And then you would have had the Cardinals in that cold weather with Warner coming into Giants Stadium in January. Maybe they don't win that game. Look, I don't know. Like, you know, do the Panthers beat the Eagles? I don't know. But I think that if it doesn't work that way out, the Giants are in the NFC Championship game and we see what happens. But, it is what it is.
I completely agree with that. And, you know, the Eagles kicked our ass that game. I was actually at the Eagles-Giants playoff game in the divisional round. I remember there was like a kick return or a block kick for a touchdown. So it wasn't like they dominated, but they definitely kicked our ass. Now, it's funny how that works out. Like you're so rooting for home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And we backed ourselves into a corner. We're playing Philly that year. And then you fast forward how many years, and instead of playing the Saints in the Superdome in the NFC Championship game, we're playing the Niners on the road. So I guess it all evens out once in a while. And
you're jumping ahead of my list over here. That's
I'm sorry.
You're getting good.
Shit.
That's a good one. So we can keep going. We'll go to number eight. Next one over here. So number eight, I'm going to stay in the end result of the 2002 tiebreaker, which is the win and in game again against the Eagles. Now, like, you know, we said before, I was at that game. It was a game that the Giants should have killed the Eagles. They were up and down the field on them. The Giants had a couple of touchdowns called back on very, very questionable calls from the ref. Tiki Barber fumbled three times, even though he rushed for 200 yards in that game against the Eagles. But, you know, as we know, it was 7-0 into the fourth quarter. You have the jump ball to Shockey, 7-7. Going late in the game, Tiki fumbles for the third time in the game late, and the Eagles recover the Giants' 26-yard line. So now you're like, oh, God, like this is just bad. The Giant defense holds, and then on comes David Akers. Now, David Akers was a Pro Bowl kicker, did all this stuff, but he never kicked well in Giant Stadium. Where he always had problems in Giant Stadium. And Madden had talked about it in previous things that it got in his head. And later on, like in 2007, like he actually missed a couple field goals, even in the game when OC had six sacks. Like Madden talks about it, he goes, sometimes even great kickers, it gets in your head. You can argue that this game is where it started it, because he came on for a 35-yard field goal, which, you know, like that chip should shot. Be chip shot automatic for an NFL kicker. He kicks it wide right, misses it. And like I've shown that before, you see the fans going berserk in that thing, in that moment, because he hits that field goal. Giants lose that game. All likelihood, they lose 10-7. And the whole thing goes to hell. They don't make the playoffs and stuff. He misses it. Game goes to overtime. In overtime, AJ Feely, I think, was the quarterback for the Eagles.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because McNabb was sitting that game, right?
Yeah, he was sitting. He didn't play. The Eagles did rest a few guys, but yeah, Feely came in. Feely got picked in overtime, where it's probably very likely. I think Brandon Short may have like mugged, like, you know, their tight end, but ball tipped. Sean Williams got a pick, and then, you know, Matt Bryant kicks the game winner. But there is a little point there that I have to raise, that why you mentioned Trey Junkin's name before Snacks. The reason Trey Junkin was signed was because he was like he was 40 whatever years old, or late 30s or whatever.
Yeah, he was an old dude.
He'd been a long snapper forever after he was a tight end for the Raiders for a while. In that game, I think it was Chris Bober was asked to long snap, because the Giants went through a bunch of guys got hurt that couldn't long snap for them. So they put Chris Bober in there. It was funny. Chris Bober actually follows me on Twitter. And he made a comment about this before, where he was talking about, like, you know, that he had a tough time with this, like the grass or whatever it was, and he never had time to really practice it. His snaps, even in that game, were bad. And in the overtime one, like Matt Allen, the punter, had to like take it off his hip, put it down. Bryant kicks a field goal to win. And if you go back and you watch like the Joe Buck highlight, he says like bad snap. Because of that snap, the Giants afterwards said, we're going to get hosed in the playoffs. We need a long snapper. And they got Trey Junkin out of retirement to play that one game, because Trey Junkin never won a Super Bowl. And he's like, you know what? Like, sort of like Eric Weddle just came out of like retirement to win the Super Bowl with the Rams. They basically tried an Eric Weddle, like get him off, you know, like the house and just come here, just long snap for us and maybe get a ring. And he said afterwards, and Trey Junkin said he wished he stayed retired. But yeah, it was because of Chris Bober struggling with the long snaps in that game against the Eagles that convinced the Giants to sign Trey Junkin.
To me that's so wild, because I would have rather Trey Junkin snap it at Matt Allen's hip in San Fran than in the dirt. But regardless, now correct me if I'm wrong, real quick, and then we can go on to seven. But when Shockey caught the ball over All Pro Brian Dawkins, wasn't Matt Bryant's extra point like very close to being missed?
He hit it off the upright, actually.
He did, right? He, yeah, it yeah, was yeah, very he, close he, to being missed. Yeah.
Yeah, he hit it off the upright, and that was because the timing was off because the snap was bad.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, go figure. So, what a fucking disgrace.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And what's funny is I when I wrote about that, every now and then I'll tweet Matt Bryant, and he had said he actually wrote back. You know, he tweeted back at me or whatever, responded, and he had mentioned that the field was all chewed up by that time because that's the grass field still at Giant Stadium. You're now into week 17. The Jets and Giants are both playing there. He said the field was just wrecked, and they tried to put new sod down before the game, and it didn't take, and it was slippery, and then everything basically, so all the operation, the kicking operation was completely screwed up.
Yeah.
So, so Matt Bryant basically told me, like, you know, why he had so many problems on that field, and that's why he said also why Akers missed as well. Same thing. He goes, these guys said they couldn't kick on that grass.
Yeah. I guess that makes sense. You know, I listen, when I screw up at work, I make excuses too, but regardless.
Yeah. Okay. So number seven, I got a tie for number seven, both involving our friend Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys.
I know where this is going.
I think you know where these are going.
Yep.
So 7A is the playoff game in Dallas when the Dallas was the number one seed. Giants are going in there. It's, you know, the Dallas is running the ball and strangling the Giants that whole game. And then Giants score before the half, tie it at 14-14. Third quarter, Dallas gets another long drive, but then Romo actually misses an open Terrell Owens. It could have been a touchdown and ended up being a field goal. They're up 17-14. Late in the third quarter, it's a third down. Romo escapes the pressure because at that point, the Giant pass rush is starting to get to him. He steps up. He has Patrick Creighton, who's wide open for an easy first down, if not a lot more. And Creighton
he could have
just drops
it. He could have went to the house, yeah.
He could have taken the house because he was coming on a crossing pattern almost. Yep. And you saw the Giants defense. And at that time, if you remember, the Giants had like so many injuries on their defensive backs, like Sam Madison was able to play. They relied on blitzing and pressure to hide the defense. That's how Spags did that, handled that game. Creighton would have been gone. He would have, yeah. Like I said, like easily a first down, if not a lot more. He drops it. Next play is the punt that McCorders takes back into Dallas territory. You switch to the fourth quarter, and then you have the Jacobs touchdown where he smashes the play clock. And then at that point, you could feel all of Dallas tense up because, like, oh my God, we can blow this.
Yep.
And then Dallas stopped trying to run the ball. They were throwing every down, and the pass rush got to them. So if Patrick Creighton catches that ball, Giants may, you know, that season may be over right there.
I may intentionally be jumping the gun, but now I was 9 years old, so I don't remember that. But what I do remember is Tony Romo missing a wide open Miles Austin, which would have basically ended the 2011 season.
That feels like a 7B type of thing.
That would be the 7B type of thing. And that's exactly it, where in that game, the Giants had, you know, they were down by what, like 14, I think 16 or whatever it was.
12 or yeah, you know, or 15, 12, 16, yeah.
Yeah, something like that fourth quarter. And they cut it to 34-29, I remember. And at that point, Dallas is near the 2 minute warning and Romo has Austin wide open because I think it was Aaron Ross bid on like a fake. It would have been a 75 yard touchdown easily. Gone. Game over, season over. You know, end of it all. The Giants go nowhere. He overthrows Austin. Austin pulls up, and after that, he punts back. And I've shown the highlight before. And Al Michaels, as you see Eli coming onto the field after that punt, he's like, "You can hear a pin drop in this place." He goes, "I never heard like 100,000 people where you can hear a pin drop because they all know, like they feel like doom is coming, that they just let the Giants off the hook, and that's 100% what happened. Like we know, Eli went down." He goes, they score the touchdown. They get a 2-point conversion. It's 37-34. JPP blocks the final field goal where
crazy
Al Michaels lets out like an exasperated thing. Like he lost money on a bet, which he may have. He's like, oh, he makes it sound like that after JPP blocks it. Miles Austin would have won a wide open touchdown. Ends that game, ends the season for the Giants.
Yeah, I remember that play to an absolute T. And you know, I think it was Collinsworth with Michaels, and he's like, it could have been lost in the lights or something. No, that was just really bad. And it's funny how Tony Romo has been on the opposite side of so many things. One is 7A and 7B, one of which not his fault at all, because the Patrick Creighton play was an unbelievable quarterback play. And to throw it from the side of his body going left like that as a right-handed thrower was ridiculous. And then just flat out missing Miles Austin, whether it's a screw up in route or whatever the case may be, but that was the game and that was the season. Yeah. It's bad. Really bad. Really, really bad. So I am all in on those two. And especially again, fuck Dallas, absolute losers, not America's team. Haven't won in 25 years. No one cares about them. They suck. So Matt, Big Blue VCR, I am, that probably so far is my favorite two. Sorry.
That's great. And one thing to mention, it's not fair, I guess, in the spirit of the lucky thing, but if I remember, Romo actually broke his knuckle like at some point during that season. That's why he was playing with a bad hand.
That's right, in week 17. Yeah.
So he's playing with a bad hand. So Dallas actually lost a few games against some pretty bad teams along the way because they had backup quarterbacks, which then brought them back and opened the window for the Giants. I didn't mention that, but yeah, like when he, that's why he was playing with it, because even in the week 17 game, he had a problem holding the snap.
Yes.
And they said like his hand was hurting the whole time when he was doing that, and he just had to suck it up and play.
I don't think it would have mattered week 17. The Giants kicked their ass up and down.
Oh, yeah. No, it would not have mattered. Like I was there for that game too. Like that was one where just you felt it. Like they were walking into a buzzsaw. And that was the time when Dallas was just, every year they go 8-8, they'd be on the precipice and they would blow it in the last game of the season. So that was a lot of fun.
That early cruise 74-yard touchdown, just like slot out. Boom, that was it. All right. Yes. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yep. All right. So number six. This one is, I'm calling it the Eli Manning trade. Because the Eli Manning trade was technically not necessarily legal in the way the NFL does their business. And there's a tie-in because Ernie Accorsi's involved. So this is where I'm going to say like a little bit of luck, and this is for Accorsi. So the little bit of history lesson was Ernie Accorsi was the GM in Baltimore back in the 80s. And at the time, the Baltimore Colts in 1983 were picking first overall. John Elway was the number one pick in everyone's mind. Like he was going to be the top guy. Marino came later, but Marino had all these like rumors of like drug use and stuff like that, which is why he fell in the draft from Pitt. That. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's why.
Fun fact. Anyway, go ahead.
So that's why he fell when people thought like was going on, but Elway was the guy that everyone wanted. And he was the guy who Ernie wanted. Elway and his father made it very clear. They did not want to play in Baltimore. And the reason they didn't want to play in Baltimore was they didn't trust the Irsay family as the owners, because they said the ownership there is sort of screwed up. And we think the team is moving and it's not. And there's going to be like, all kinds of upheaval. And the Irsay is like, no, we're not moving. We're not going anywhere. Like, you know, this isn't happening. And what Elway told the Colts was, if you draft me, I'm going to go play for the Yankees, because the Yankees had drafted him. And he was going to be the right fielder in Yankee Stadium. Like they had it all set up. And if you watch, there's a great documentary. I think it's called from Elway to Marino, a 30 for 30 ESPN. And they talk about it. And there's a scene there where Elway mentioned he goes into George Steinbrenner's office and he pulls up this thing of like what he envisions like the 1985 Yankees to be. And Elway's agent goes like, he's like, who's Mattingly? And he goes, oh, he's a guy who's with, in Columbus, he's going to be really good. Like, so he's going to be the first baseman coming up. So Elway was going to play for the, he actually played for the Yankees in like the spring before in the Cape Cod League and stuff, just to kind of show that it was happening. Ernie basically does not back down. He drafts Elway. Elway then says, I'm not coming. I'm playing for the Yankees. We're done here. The Irsays start panicking and they want to trade him. And what Ernie tells the Irsays is, he goes, look, if you're going to do that, there's going to be two press conferences. You're going to announce the trade and I'm going to announce my resignation. So they tell, so they say, okay, whatever, they let it go. It wasn't until May later on that finally the Broncos trade happens, where they send him to the Broncos for a number of picks and like other, like players. And, of course he leaves after that, but it always sort of like stuck in his craw that he let Elway go. Fast forward now to 2004, there's Eli. And in Ernie's eyes, Eli is the guy he wants. Eli does not want to go to the Chargers. Now, it's never been like officially said why. The rumors have been that Marty Schottenheimer told Archie how screwed up the ownership was with the Chargers, because when he was there, and he's like, you don't want any part of this. I mean, that's always been sort of like the whispers of it. And
which makes
and
sense.
That, you know, and that ultimately, like, the Chargers may be moving, which we found out later they did when they mm-hmm. went back to LA. So Eli did not want to go to San Diego. So he's pushing back. Somewhat similar circumstance to what Elway's doing. Eli didn't have the, you know, the Yankees to fall back on, but he had the Manning name, you know, like he's got Archie, he's got Peyton. So he's got, you know, some credentials to kind of hold off. As the Giants are back and forth talking to AJ Smith, who is the GM of the Chargers about this, AJ Smith is asking for, you know, first round picks. He's asking for OCU Manura. He's asking for all these players. And Ernie's like saying, no, no, no. It then, I think it was in his book, of course, you write something that he got through back channels that the Chargers wanted Phillip Rivers. Ernie didn't want Phillip Rivers. Ernie wanted Roethlisberger right. was his guy if Eli wasn't going to be there. He was going to take Roethlisberger at 4. So when the draft comes around, Chargers pick Eli. Eli's up there looking miserable. And there's a report Eli refused to wear the hat. If you ever notice, Eli never wears the Chargers
never wears
hat.
The hat. Yeah.
He holds the jersey up, but he doesn't wear the hat. They try to hand it to him. He wouldn't wear the hat. So as the draft is going along, another sort of like whisper happens to Ernie that, like, if you take Phillip Rivers, maybe we can engineer a trade afterwards. Now, this isn't the NBA where you can, like, in the NBA draft, like, you draft a guy for a player later on, you trade him down. Like, you know, that's how they do it in the NBA. The NFL doesn't have those rules. So Ernie basically took Rivers at a time when AJ Smith could be like, you know what? Like, you know, eat it. He's yours. Screw you. And yeah. then now you got Phillip Rivers, who's not the guy you want. And there's nowhere that Ernie can go to the NFL, you know, like, you know, commissioner to be like, hey, I had a deal that they were supposed to trade me. The NFL's like, we don't have those agreements here. So, you know, Ernie took a risk to actually go do that and believe that this was going to happen, that the trade was going to then happen after the fact while the draft was going on. So when you look back at this thing, there was a little bit of luck in there that, you know, Ernie stuck his neck out because it could have blown up in his face. The Giants could have had Phillip Rivers as their quarterback, who's the guy who they didn't really want.
Right. And that's so crazy to me because Ernie was hell-bent on Elway, didn't get him. Elway didn't play for Ernie. And, I mean, this was Ernie's last stop, regardless. He was a little bit older at the time, no, when he was yep. general manager with the Giants. So if he doesn't get Eli, the guy he wants, his legacy could look a lot different. And, you know, obviously if – wow, yeah, that's – oof.
And yeah, imagine the reporting.
Imagine Phillip Rivers in New York, by the way.
But also just imagine the aftermath of it and the reporting yeah. that would have been done and Ernie Accorsi and the Maras sitting and Coughlin sitting up there saying Rivers was the guy. Rivers yeah, is our yeah. guy. And
we all know you're lying.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, man, that yeah. would have been bizarre. Bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I will say Ernie probably got it right with the two quarterbacks he did want in Eli and then Ben was – fallback if he couldn't make this illegal trade with AJ Smith and the Chargers. But and he he refused to trade OC, right? Like that was
he
OC
yeah, he
was
said
off limits.
OC scuttled the trade. He said OC's a non-starter. You want okay. OC, there's no trade.
Okay.
So yeah, he that. Pulled and I, you know, if I remember, like, even up through the Friday, AJ Smith was trying to pry OC and Ernie wouldn't put him in. And then finally on Saturday after the draft happened and Eli was picked, that's when everything kind of fell into play. And then they agreed on, you know, the Giants, you know, two first round picks,
yeah.
You know, a third or whatever it was. And those, that's how it worked out. I think Roman Oben also went to them.
If I remember correctly, the Chargers kind of got like a good haul from those picks. Like Sean Merriman was a great player. Didn't they?
Nate Kading.
Nate Kading, who was a great kicker. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they didn't do badly for themselves. They just didn't get a guy who won two Super Bowls.
Right. that is very true. And I always find it funny because the year after, I want to say it was 2005, the Giants only have 4 picks. And I think not all 4 of those picks were like, you know, prevalent to the team, but I think it was like Tuck and Webster, and like they had four impact guys. And it's
yeah, the Tuck Webster's Jacobs and
yeah, right, yes, yeah, Jacobs. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Crazy
yeah.
how so, that yeah, works
they made him count.
All right, that's gonna do it for this week's show. We will see you next week where Big Blue VCR will be taking you through moments 5 through 1, luckiest moments in Giants franchise history. Have a great week. Next week will actually be St. Patrick's Day, so the theme will make more sense. Keep on bleeding blue. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.